Whiskey, gin, and brandy. With the glass, I'm pretty handy. So join me for a drink, boys.
Welcome to the Barfly Podcast Season 5. My name is Jeff Burkhart, Barfly columnist for the Bay Area News Group, and author of the books 20 Years Behind Bars, The Spirit of the Adventures of a Real Bartender, and its sequel, Pearl Denied. My co-host and barback is Kevin Blum, editor of The Marin Dish. Sit back and relax as we attempt to pull back the curtain on the hospitality industry, and feel free to pour yourself a beverage. I know Kevin and I will. Today we welcome back Heidi Quayle. I like to say there are chefs, little c, and then there are chefs, capital C. Heidi is definitely the capital C variety. She's the brainchild of Chaim Pinsilatis, board member of the nonprofit Extra Food, a cookbook author, a memoir author, and the culinary chair of the Great Chefs and Wineries event benefiting Lifehouse, where I will be joining her this year for my 10th year. So welcome back, Heidi.
That's
great to have you on the show.
10 years. Yeah, Jeff. Thank you.
We have to take a little break for the pandemic. I'm always wondering how I calculate that into my overall career. But we're out of that. We're into a new, brave new world, perhaps. And that's what we want to talk about.
Great. I think it's 34 years with Lifehouse, but I don't account for, 2 years we didn't do it?
2 years we didn't do it at all, and then 1 year we did a kind of...
Online.
Online.
That's right. Yeah.
Last year was the first in-person event after all that time. We did it over in Richmond, and then ironically, they decided to change the facility into pickleball courts.
I know.
And so this year it's
which
at Fort Mason.
Controversial.
But that's coming up this weekend.
Where is it this year?
At Fort Mason, at the Festival Pavilion.
Right, week from Saturday, and Huey and I, it's kind of like Alan Alda, same time next year. We do our kiss and see each other and hug each other and do what we do best, and then we don't see each other for another year. So it's really great to have him really be such a great cheerleader for Lifehouse. We all are.
It's a wonderful event. I mean, if you have never been, it's fabulous. I believe it's sold out this year, which is great. Or if not, it's on the cusp. So 500 people get to enjoy all the best that Marin has to offer and all the great wineries and all that sort of thing for a fee that goes to help developmentally disabled people.
Yeah. And it's a big part of their budget. So it's wonderful to hear that they're sold out. They rely on this event. First year we did it at Smith Ranch when I was up at Smith Ranch, was, what was that? I think it was 1990. Yeah. We've come a long way.
And they've changed venues a number of times, right? It was Peacock Gap for, 5, 6, 7 years there.
Oh, it was Greek Orthodox. Yeah. It was Fireman's Fund. Yeah.
Well, how many people were at the first one compared to, nowadays?
I think it was a couple hundred, but not 500.
When I talked to Nancy the other day, she was saying that they pretty much outgrown every facility in Marin County. So
that's awesome.
Which is great.
Great problem.
Again, it's a fun time. I mean, it's great. You know, Huey Lewis has played a couple of times. Jefferson Starship was there last year. It's Pride and Joy this year. So it's a lot of fun. It's a good way also from not only from a consumer's point of view, but as a purveyor to go there and be exposed to an audience that you might not normally get.
Very true.
Because they get to come by and sample the best that you have to offer. And in Marin County, we have a bountiful of best, which is great.
So. Well said, Jeff. You want to do a podcast?
I'm thinking about writing a column.
Oh, wait.
So you've been with them from the beginning, right? You've been the culinary chair. Yeah, because I remember Bradley Ogden was on the wine committee at the very beginning.
And
he's moved on to other things, and so now it's Sid Saul basically chairs that. And again, I think the sponsors this year, Alamar Spirits and King Floyd's, along with all the others. So it should be a lot of fun.
And what's your specialty cocktail?
Vesper this year. Gin and vodka and a little bit of King Floyd's orange bitters. Fabulous.
James Bond inspired.
Very James. Well, I just black tie.
I was near you last time. All I could see, you're just constantly shaking.
Yes.
Shaking over and over.
It's a busy night. Yeah. There's a lot of Vespers sold. So, and again, it all goes to a great, great thing. That's this coming weekend. But what's on the horizon for you? You're still plugging along. I mean, Marinatus and plugging along. Maybe that's not the way to put it. But
actually, Marinatus, I'm not an owner of it. I have not been an owner of Marinatus for maybe 5 years.
Okay.
But we are down the street. We still do the desserts. We do the tres leches and the budino.
That mud pudding that you do? Oh my God, that's the best. The vegan one? Oh my God, that's the best thing I've ever had.
I just want you to know there's some in the fridge. I do have some for you before you leave. So just know. I remember what to your heart was. The vegan mud is with coconut milk.
Yes. Oh man, it's so good.
It's so good. Yes, that's a takeout. And that flies out. The restaurant is doing super well. You know, we can talk all we want about the pandemic. It threw us all, as you know, on our heels. And we had to kind of figure out how to navigate. What was the best thing was is our community was just so supportive. Just weepy supportive. It was like, oh my, thank you, you know. Certainly that was when we, you know, made takeout bigger.
Right.
So takeout got, we just made it bigger and bigger because we could. A lot of people had to invent themselves and do takeout. We had already had takeout. So that just was something we could rely on. Because remember, don't you remember how it went? First it went, you could do only food to go. If you were just a restaurant, you know, it was food to go, but you had to, you know, you boxed it and it was hot food and it was like, oh, right. You know, we all know how boxed restaurant food is okay a few minutes later, but it's not perfect.
Right.
So, and then remember, then it was 25% of seating, you know, you had to measure how far you were away. I mean, oh my God, I don't know why this is PTSD. I shouldn't even be talking about it. But anyway, you know, business is wonderful and we have a really, really supportive community. I'd say 75% of our business is there all the time, which is really awesome.
I think that's why a lot of you guys and where I work survived, because they have that community investment. It's those other flash in the pan kind of things that are the newer, I'm not even sure how to calibrate it anymore, because it's such an unusual, you know, the fast casual, it's a whole different kind of ball game. And they seem to be doing all right now, but the pandemic really weeded those guys out.
Sure.
I mean, man, that was a big leveler in that regard. For legacy restaurants, it certainly got them to recalibrate and were reappreciated by the communities that they were in, because people realized this place could disappear.
Yeah.
And then what do we do?
Isn't that true? And, you know, I think that I being from the chef, and even though I'm a business owner, it's really it's a hospitality business. You can be a fantastic cook, but you really have to put out that hospitality. And I think that's what we had to try to do our best at during the pandemic. That certainly came back to us. You know, I don't know if you know, during the pandemic, we made 10,000 meals for extra food. We started a GoFundMe to make these 10,000 meals. We said, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to make these 10,000 meals, but we're going to just use that money through the GoFundMe just for making meals and for our staff. And particularly those vulnerable staff who, you know, were making little to no unemployment. We raised over $100,000 for this project to make 10,000 meals. That's when I realized, out of all the years of, I mean, I've been in the restaurant business for 45 years, how important being a part of your community is. Because it came back to me. I got to start getting all weepy on me.
Yeah.
But it really came back. Yeah. And I just said, you know, that being supportive and then needing that support in that kind of time that it was inexplicably crazy really was telling and loving and amazing for me. It was amazing. It was a dark time. I mean, wasn't it dark for you?
I remember the last time we did the podcast, we were masked and we were 6 feet apart. Remember that?
No. All right, we want to talk about the pandemic. But I'll tell you what happened at the pandemic. 6 years ago, I was given an award for the Pacific Sun. It was like a Heroes of Marin or something like that.
Yeah.
And I reread that piece a few years ago, and I said that if I could have my way, I would start a soup kitchen, you know? And I go, wow, I said that long ago?
So it was already planted.
Yeah,
right there.
I go, wow, because I'd been thinking about it. And then what happened during the pandemic was I'm on the board of Extra Food, and Extra Food, we're in our 11th year. And what Extra Food does so beautifully is they collect food that otherwise would either be discarded, you know, put in the landfill, whatever, and they bring it to agencies that can repurpose the food or use the food. And what I did to make these 10,000 meals, part of what I did is I would rescue food from the food market, so food from the farmer's market. So what Extra Food does on Thursdays and Sundays, and they actually do it on Wednesday's farmer's market too in Cordillera, they send volunteers, and the volunteers at the end of the market collect all the produce that doesn't get sold or the farmers don't want to, you know, bring back, you know, the abundance that's left over. And certainly last summer, the abundance can be a couple tons of food.
Wow.
I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, you know, people didn't buy it. They over planted. There's too much and they wanted to bring it so that it can be given away. And so what I found when I was doing these 10,000 meals, I would mainly get veggies from them. Of course, it's only veggies. Veggies and salad. But then when I realized what else was being given to Extra Food was somewhat obscure things, like, you know, be it kohlrabi or turnips or wild mushrooms of, you know, just, you know, ones that you don't usually see, and all of these things. And I just thought, what do people know what to do with this? Mm-hmm. You know, we serve extra food in my, I'll tell you about my soup kitchen, serves low-income seniors mainly low-income seniors. And I think, do they know what to do with, you know, they may get two heads of kale, some broccoli, and purple cauliflower. And so I just think, and that's what plan I go, they know what to do with lettuce. They know what to do with salad greens, but do they really know if they were given this produce in their community pantry, would they take it and would they know what to do with it? Mm-hmm. And that's when I said, I know, I can do something with this. And that's what birthed the Super Kitchen that we started January 2023. So what we do, Community Action Marin has graciously let us use their kitchen twice a week on Tuesday and Thursday afternoons, and we make 600 servings of soup a week that gets picked up by Extra Food, and they distribute it around the county. So yesterday's was from the bounty that I got from Sunday. And the bounty I got from Sunday was a ton of wild mushrooms. And I'm talking, some are cultivated. You know, it was shiitakes and blue oyster and king trumpets. I mean, banana boxes full. We produce on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And so we basically, on Tuesdays, we prep for Thursday soup. On Thursdays, we will prep. Like yesterday, I got two banana boxes of cauliflower. And I said, don't bring me the purple. I can't do pink soup. Yeah. I'll never forget one time, I couldn't be there. So I said, could you bring whatever is plentiful to Enseladas and I'll have them save it for me. You know, you mark it for the soup kitchen. And they brought me a banana box of purple cauliflower and and walnuts in the shell. It's like, oh my God, what you guys, do you know what I'm doing? I'm doing soup. So anyway, this is really fun. So we have volunteers. And we have this, what's great about this kitchen, it's a 60-gallon tilt kettle and a batch freezer. So we can prep, cook, puree, if it's a puree, cool, package in 4 hours every Tuesday and Thursday. Wow. So 600 servings. So it's wonderful. Those oddball things. And so, you know, yesterday, you know, the soup we made yesterday, it had a few fennel, you know, bulbs of fennel. It had, you know, had some celery. I don't like people go, oh, stone soup. I said, don't you ever say stone soup. Because you know, I really try to make it so that it's, you know, that it's not this watered down mess.
Kevin and I just jumped when she said that, by the way.
What, stone soup? Were you going to say
no, I'm not doing it.
No. I'm really thoughtful. It would be soup that I would serve in the restaurant. Right. You know, I really try to make something. And you know what they said that this makes me weepy, that I'll get some feedback and one of the residents said of this community, we can't believe an Enseladas chef is making food for us. Does that just, it just makes me weepy. Yeah. It's just like, how beautiful is that? Why do you know, just like Jose Andres, feed the people, you know? And I'm doing this my very small way, but it really is, that's my soul project.
But it also takes an expert like you to recognize the value of some of those ingredients, because a lot of times, like at a soup kitchen situation or a retirement home, they're just throwing stuff in a pot. And it's the same recipe all the time. And it's like, it doesn't take a whole lot to really jazz that up.
Oh, right? For sure.
I mean, you can, like some fennel, wow, there you go, yeah, right? And to be able to utilize, well, that's the whole farm-to-table thing in its actual nascent stage, not what it's become now, but the actual value of that is doing that for people in need. And that's beautiful.
It's beautiful. I have somebody pick up things on Thursday for us. The leader is so great. And she's one of our volunteers. And she'll go, what are you looking for? I go, I'm starting with onions and potatoes. Help me out here. Yeah. But then she texts me. Well, here's what's coming in. I said, oh, I'll take that.
Right.
But you know, on Sundays, I go myself with Mark. Mark and I go. And okay, I'll take the broccoli. I'll make, because as you'll see, it's just fluky, you know, sometimes it's a farmer. You know, there's some of them are so generous. You know, Barbara Gelata is one of them. They just give a lot to us. God bless them. But, you know, sometimes it's like, that's all we're seeing. You know what, here's what I put in a lot of soups. Parmesan cheese rinds. Enseladas grind so much cheese, so we save all the Parmesan cheese rinds. And that's my umami. It's like, these soups are, I have soup for you. You'll see, oh, what is that? Oh, it's Parmesan cheese that hasn't been fully ground yet. But anyway, it's that's what's great about Enseladas, too, is that we get part of what was important to me, certainly with my new partners, I'll have to talk to you about my new partners, is that I say, this project is important in Enceladas, it's important to me. And so they give several hundred dollars every month. The things that we can't get, I get things at the food bank, I get things at the farmer's markets, you know, like oil and spices. And now that oil is, I don't know if you know this, oil has just shot up because there's such a drought in the Mediterranean. And so, you know, I'll just do EVO and butter. So Enceladas. Every soup has to have a fat of some sort. Or through all of this, these resources, the farmer's market, food bank, you know, and Enceladas, it's producing a lot of soup.
Well, and again, this is back to that connection to the community. Not everybody can go out anymore. I mean, I get that a lot with my column where people say, you know, I'm not at the stage I can go out, but I can live vicariously through what you're saying.
And do we on Sundays, Jeff? We live vicariously.
Well, sometimes directly vicariously,
it's so
right?
Great. Yeah. It's great. What you're talking about doing something awesome. It's great. Yeah. It's great to hear
that. The idea is that not everyone can experience the restaurant in the way that restaurants are designed to function nowadays. And so, but that doesn't mean they're still not part of our communities and they don't still deserve our care and our appreciation.
Amen.
And that sort of thing.
Amen.
Have you identified the 600 in need? How does that process work?
You know, it's really, that's a good question, Kevin. You know, when I started this, I said to Extra Food, that I'm very involved with the organization, I say, I care who gets this soup, but I care you are the ones who know. You know, I just want to know that it's going to those who need it. They have so much outreach in the community to agencies that feed people or have food pantries.
So and they have a whole network.
My gosh, yes. Yeah. So many. So really, it's soup may come to them. Usually a group will get soup once every other week. They identified it, so that they'll get the first and third, the second and fourth. Literally, we put it in bus tubs, in pints and then in bus tubs, and they pick it up the next day and they send it off. Mm-hmm. I have actually the grid of who gets what and when, but some of it are pantries, some of it are low-income senior housing complexes. Lifehouse is one of the people that gets soup. I leave that to them. I just know that they know who's best.
So don't worry about tomorrow.
Please join us next time where we welcome industry insiders and industry outsiders to talk about the state of the restaurant and bar business. My name is Jeff Burkhart. Thanks for listening.